Chapter 8. I will never talk to you again. I was 11 years old, coming home from a trip to the neighboring town with my mother and my little brother. It was sunny, and I remember we hadn't been to school that summer day. My brother and I sat in the little hallway and took off our shoes while our mother unloaded the grocery bags from her bicycle. The letter was on the table, my mother's name written in my father's beautiful handwriting. He had worked as a sign painter before technology took over, and I had spent years trying to emulate his graceful strokes with a pen. I knew immediately that something was not right. My mother was sitting on the couch in the living room, reading the handwritten letter on the already creased paper between her nervous fingers. She was trying hard not to cry, but she couldn't hide it from me. "Go play some football in the garden, boys," she said. My little brother was 3 years younger than me and too young to know that something was going on. I knew that I had to get my hands on that letter and find out what it was about. I had my suspicions, but it was hard to believe that it could be real. From the garden, I observed my mother through the windows to our living room, crying. I saw her hide the letter on top of our tallest cupboard. I wasn't stupid. I crawled up to grab it later when no one was in the living room. Then I sneaked out to the green-tiled bathroom, locked the door with a little metal hatch that had always safely hid me from the world, and sat down to read it. "Dear Eve, this is very hard for me to write." The tears of my mother had landed on some of the letters and faded them. My father wanted a divorce. He had met someone else and was too much of a coward to tell it to her face. From that moment on, it was all over. The first crack had been made in the dam holding our family together. It was the end of our perfect life as we knew it. I was in my bed as my father got home from work in the evening. I could hear my mother cry and scream at him from downstairs. He was trying to calm her down. He walked up the stairs and slowly opened the door to my room, whispering to see if I was still awake. I lay under my blanket, staring into the wall. I hated him. I knew exactly what this meant. We would have to move out of the house, maybe even go to another school and start all over. I loved my life, my family, and our home. Now he had ruined everything. Despite my young age, I was completely aware of the situation and what I intended to do about it. I wanted him to feel the pain. He shouldn't get away with this without tasting the bitter consequences of his actions. The most powerful thing I could do was to rip his own son out of his life. "These are the last words you will ever hear me say to you," I said inside my head. Then I told him out loud. He sat down on the edge of my little bed and tried to tell me something. I hid under my duvet and screamed at him to get out of my room. And so it was. I never said a word to him again. It all seemed to happen very fast. Everything fell apart that summer. My mother almost attempted to take her own life and was admitted to a closed psychiatric department. She'd lost so much weight and cried so much that I couldn't recognize her anymore. There was also a lawsuit, but I don't remember much of it. It was pretty bad. My father tried to talk to me, but I ignored him and never answered. Many of my classmates' parents were getting divorced in those years, and it was often hard on the kids. I tend to believe the one I went through was definitely on the rougher side of the scale. Of course, compared to the lives of children all over the world, living in poverty, war, hunger, and disease, it was nothing. But in my reality as a kid, it was tough, and it affected me a lot. I couldn't concentrate in school. I had always done my homework and was way ahead of everyone else in the class. When I finished kindergarten, I had solved the last math book in a series that was going all the way to the 7th grade. But it all fell apart, and I paid no attention to what went on in class anymore. I didn't do my homework, and in the breaks between classes, I just sat and looked out the window or drew on a piece of paper. I was completely introverted, often disappearing into some impossibly complicated piece of programming code on my computer, and didn't have any connections to the world around me. My classmates could feel it too. I was alienating myself, and they saw my life take a turn for the worse. My brother and I lived with my grandmother for a while. For every day that went by, where I saw my mother sink deeper and deeper into depression, the hatred towards my father grew. The house I loved so deeply, our home, was being sold. It physically hurt inside of me the day my mother told me that someone had finally bought it. She couldn't afford it alone on her low salary as a secretary. There were only villas in the town we lived in, and we didn't have anywhere near the money needed to buy any of them. Eventually, we found a small, shared house right across the road from the forest. It had a little garden with a pond, and for the first time, we felt like something positive was coming our way. It was a stroke of luck that no one had bought it before us. My mother was smiling, and so was I. My little brother was smiling too. It was just a few hundred meters from our old house, a stone's throw from the school and the forest I loved so much. I had already planned where I would put my bedroom furniture. Then it all fell to the ground again. After we had signed the contract, we found out that the roof was full of mold and the deal had to be cancelled. The real estate agent had known all about it but still tried to sell it to us, well aware that we would have to move out within the near future and replace the roof. He knew we were weak, desperate, and he was trying to take advantage of us. It was pure luck that we found out in time, as it would have been a financial catastrophe for us. It looked like we would have to move to an apartment in another town. It was the worst case scenario for me. Not only were we moving out of my childhood home, my brother and I would also have to go to another school and move away from all our friends. At that age, it was the worst thing I could ever imagine, and it was entirely my father's fault. We couldn't find anywhere to live and had to ask for help at the social office. My mother had yelled at them so everyone in the waiting room could hear that she was under no circumstances moving her kids to another town. I never told her or anyone else, but I was grateful that she fought so hard for that. With a stroke of luck and at the last possible minute before we were put on the street, we managed to get a tiny apartment in the small town we loved so much. There wasn't much room for the three of us, but at least we could stay in the same school and still only be a bicycle ride away from our friends. I was crying as I lay down to sleep the first night in the new place. I'd gotten a new bed. It didn't smell right. There was only one bedroom, and my mother and brother slept there too. All three of us cried as the lights were switched off that very first night. It must have been horrible for her. I missed our family and old house so much. I couldn't understand how my father could do this to us. I was in complete disbelief at where things had ended. My life had been so perfect, and in the blink of an eye, it all had vanished. I could never go back. My brother was still little, and my mother wasn't much stronger than him, mentally or physically. I was the man of the house, doing all the stuff that my father had used to do. I fixed the TV, installed the electrical devices, carried heavy stuff up the stairs, and put together our new bland furniture from IKEA. My mother was working hard to make our daily life run smoothly. She was struggling with her own problems and at the same time trying to fill out the role of two parents for me and my brother. We couldn't afford a car, and I remember her coming home pale and tired with the bicycle full of plastic bags with groceries. One day she crashed it and punctured her liver, nearly killing her. The doctors said that she only survived because she was in good shape from running. I was glad that I didn't lose her there and can't even begin to imagine the consequences that would have had on our lives. My brother was a bit too young to really understand everything that was going on, I think. He just kind of followed quietly along with everything and was seeing my father every second weekend, waiting for him on the street Friday afternoons. I didn't want to look out the window in case I would catch a glimpse of him. I didn't want anything to do with him. There was never a nice vibe in the air when my brother came home those Sunday evenings. My mother was always half sad, half angry, and I guess my brother felt guilty that he, as the only one, still saw my father. It saddened me very much that he should have to bear those difficulties on his shoulders. He was just a kid who was suddenly caught between two parents in a tough situation. We were relatively poor, my mother was depressed, and every now and then adults around me would ask how I felt. I went to see a psychologist, but she couldn't get a word out of me. It became almost a sport for me to refuse talking. That way, I felt powerful and in control. It would be healthy for you to talk to someone about how you feel, Christian. I heard that so often, but I wasn't interested. I wanted to show everyone that I could do things on my own. I had made the decision not to see my father and was determined to prove to myself and everyone else that I was strong enough to handle the pressure that came along. I don't have a dad anymore, was the only thing I told those who attempted to talk with me. Along the way, it eventually became clear to me that I was sliding in the wrong direction. I was keeping a lot of anger inside, and dark clouds had started to gather over me as I locked myself more and more into my own little world. I began to see how the person I had expected to become faded away. I no longer knew what I would end up like, and it scared me. So, I decided to fight it. I wouldn't let the emotions, the anger, get to me. I wouldn't allow it to control my thoughts or my actions. I was deeply hurt, and it would be easy for me to project that into bad behavior or to shut everybody out. I was going to do things differently, and I started to work on keeping the tsunami of emotions far away, not letting them affect my mind. The ambitious plans I had laid down for my life were not going to be ruined by my selfish father. I wanted to make something out of it, not get sucked into depression and lack of confidence like I had seen happen to other kids in school. My life would be exactly as amazing as I had imagined it to be. I felt a strong determination inside me to pull myself together and do something with my life, to crawl back out of that black hole I was about to fall into. A combination of anger and determination set my mind on a straight line towards the goals I'd set for myself. I wanted to create opportunities for myself in life. If I leaned back and hoped for the best, I was afraid that I would get pulled back into realizing my new, scary, unknown destiny. Instead, I developed a powerful focus on long-term planning and creating a life of independence, freedom, and opportunities to do what I wanted to do. The very same focus that drives my everyday work as an adult. Twice a week, I caught a ride to training in the neighboring town. There was a big happy Taekwondo family with three kids and a big dog. Everyone was going to training, crammed into their refreshingly dirty black Volvo. One of the kids was the youngest black belt ever in the country. He was always competing and winning the Danish championships every year. I admired his courage and confidence. He was usually a calm boy, but I guess he one day had enough of being bullied and kicked another kid in the head during football practice. It wasn't too good. Myself, I had competed just once when I was about 10 years old. A kid with a green belt back kicked me in the stomach, so I lost all my air. I still remember the pain when my entire body seemed to retract in one big cramp. I had tunnel vision and the helmet strapped around my chin made me feel like I couldn't breathe. I was crying in the corner when my trainer lifted my arms over my head to try and open up my lungs. The emotions were overwhelming. It wasn't a nice experience and I quickly decided that it wasn't anything for me. Since I didn't give a shit about being like my father anymore, I was looking for something else to pursue in my training. Getting kicked in the stomach wasn't doing it for me. One of the older kids was going to a forms tournament and invited me to join him. Three judges gave points for a choreographed series of movement, just like ice skating or talent shows on TV. I won the Danish championships in front of 30 other kids the first time I tried it. When I got that first gold medal around my neck, I remember thinking that it was a much more fun way of competing than getting beat up. My new focus in training became a way for me to channel all the pain, sorrow, and anger out of my life. I put more determination and power into every session than I'd ever done before. When I'd seen my mother cry, or the sad look on my poor brother's face when he got home from spending the weekend at my father's place, I got all of that out on the wooden floors. Every time I kicked the pads, it was with grinding teeth and white knuckles. I remember some of the kids were afraid to hold pads for me, in case they caught me on a bad day. I really got things out of my system that way. Even though it had absolutely zero resemblance to actual fighting skills against a resisting opponent, I found an interesting training for the forms tournaments. The same movements were being practiced again and again to absolute perfection. If a certain kick wasn't high enough, I would stretch every day to make it easier to perform. The sports halls with the cold floors were completely silent when I and the other competitors stepped onto the mats for the finals. I didn't win every time, but I usually always reached the final rounds. There, I would have to show the most difficult form I knew while everyone was watching. I certainly did not learn how to fight, but there was a ton of practice in concentration, immersion, focus, and performing under a lot of pressure. Training was an efficient way for me to get rid of the bad things in my head and focus on the healthy stuff instead. I was a troubled kid and often wonder what kind of person I would have become if I didn't have that vent to let all that stuff out. Every summer, when the beach bursts into leaf and the whole forest is neon green, I take the train out there with my mountain bike. The quiet beauty is just like I remember it from my childhood. Leaves whispering in the wind, the sun filtered by the treetops, and little branches cracking under my feet. I always drive down through the small town, turning the corner on the little street with the green hedge and the red brick house. I would give everything to sit in that garden again and smell the grass between my fingers, to touch the sloping walls of my room, feel the steps of the wooden staircase, smell the walls of the basement, and just one more time, look out at the garden from the living room. Every summer since the divorce, I've been standing there on that street with my bicycle. I never find the courage to ring the doorbell.